You're listening to the Advisor Elevation Podcast, the podcast for financial advisors seeking to increase the enterprise value of their practice. Your host is Matt Eilers, Chief Business Development Officer at USA Financial and creator of Practice Synergy, an 8-step process for refining your processes, elevating the client experience, and maximizing growth within your financial practice. He is an investment advisor representative of and securities are offered through USA Financial Securities, member FINRA SIPC, a registered investment advisor. Advisor Elevation is proud to be a part of the Advisor Advancement Network.
Welcome to Advisor Elevation. This is your host, Matt Eilers. Today, I am really excited to feature an interview with Mr. George Kinder. If you joined me on episode six was all about best practices for a better first appointment. We spent a good amount of time talking about Kinder's three questions, and I couldn't be more pumped to have George on the show today to discuss with us a number of different things. So George Kinder, if you're not familiar with him, is internationally recognized as the father of the life planning movement. And so George is a Harvard-educated guy, super, super sharp individual. And he has spent many, many years training professionals on how to integrate life planning into what they do. So he's trained over 3,000 professionals in 30 different countries. He actually founded the Kinder Institute of Life Planning after 30 years in the field as a practicing financial planner and tax advisor. So this guy has been in your shoes. He's done exactly what you're doing. And the process that he's going to share today, what we're going to get a glimpse into is how he has done it differently and how he has gone above and beyond just the world of financial planning and differentiated himself and really connected with his people differently. So super pumped to have George on the show. Here are the three biggest things that we're going to cover today in the interview. So first off, we're going to dive into the three questions that we mentioned in episode six. We're going to get into the weeds on these. And these are three questions that will change the way that you establish a relationship with somebody. So if you're trying to make a true connection, and if you're trying to actually understand what's at the core of people, you need to understand the answer to the three questions that we're going to ask. So that alone is going to be something you can take away from this podcast and bring right into your business, something that's actionable that you can walk away with and start using tomorrow. So excited to talk with George about that. You can tell I was a little giddy to talk to him because I've been a little bit of a student of his following, of his method, and I've kept my eye on what he's been doing. I have his books. I've really been studying this whole life planning. Now, I haven't gone through life planning, what he's done, but I've seen the impact that it has on the advisors that are doing it. So been really excited to feature him on this show. You know, the other thing that we're going to do is we're really going to discuss the importance of life planning inside of a financial planning process. So you hear how George incorporated life planning when he was in the field and when he was, you know, working with clients just like you. And we're going to be able to have an understanding of why it's such a big deal that this stuff has to happen as a part of your process. In fact, we'll discuss about the fact that if you're holding yourself out as a true fiduciary, you need to be doing life planning. So if you're listening to this episode and you call yourself a fiduciary, you need to listen to this because this is something you really need to be doing to deliver the best service to your clients. So we will discuss that in detail. Very, very intriguing conversation. And last but not least, we're going to get to hear from George about his newest book, which is A Golden Civilization and a Map of Mindfulness, which just was released in March of this year. And George is going to talk about his inspiration for how he wrote that book and how his efforts have really inspired a grassroots movement across the globe. Some really, really cool and insightful conversation coming your way. Again, super pumped to have George here on the show. So without further ado, let's go ahead and launch into the interview with Mr. George Kinder. All right, George, welcome to the Advisor Elevation Podcast. George, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Great, Matt. Good to be here. Thanks so much to you.
Awesome, awesome. So I'm really excited to have you on the show. Just to give you a little bit of background of why I've been so excited, I was recently on a quest, and this goes back a couple years, where as I was working more and more with financial advisors, trying to help them differentiate themselves throughout the client experience, throughout their sales processes, their appointment processes, all those different things, I stumbled across your work when I was trying to identify ways to differentiate yourself, like the first time you meet with somebody and in that first appointment. And that's when I discovered the three questions. So I've been a little bit enamored with those three questions. I've been sharing them with a lot of advisors that I do work with, just saying, hey, you need to check this out. This is something that I think makes a ton of sense. So I'm really excited to be talking to the guy behind all the wisdom there. So that's very, very exciting. And just so you know, a couple episodes ago, I actually did another podcast that was just on some first appointment stuff. And we actually talked about the three questions briefly, but didn't go into the weeds on them. So really excited for all the listeners that were on that episode that get to take that deeper dive here today and hear it from the horse's mouth, if you will. So, you know, just to kick things off, George, I would really like for you to bring us all up to speed of, you know, who the heck is George Kinder? Meaning, how did you get to be where you are today? What has this journey looked like, you know, from the start when you got out of school? Understand that you had, you know, 30 years in the business as a planner. How did you get into this whole life planning thing? You know, what are you doing now? Tell us a little bit about that journey.
Well, gosh, Matt, there's so much in what you've just said in the preamble you've begun with. Because I think we really ought to go and look at that first meeting a little bit. Mm-hmm. And of course, the three questions are widely written about. Well, I've written about them widely in my books, and we train them profoundly in multiple multi-day trainings. Mm-hmm. But the where this actually began, I've been thinking about this. It began long before I left college and university and set up a business, and that is that. It began when I was but a boy. Mm-hmm. You'll be surprised by this. It began when I was 3 years old, because what happened, what my life has been about, and you're picking up one strand of it, which is life planning. It's a major strand of it. But all through my life, what I've been passionate about is freedom. And I've been passionate about it, to know it for myself and experience it and live it, to live every moment as if it were, you know, whether it's my last or the most fulfilling moment I could have, but also to bring the experience of freedom, to maximize freedom. Right now, as you know, my new book is about maximizing freedom across civilization. Mm-hmm. But here in life planning, the notion is, how do we maximize moments of freedom in our economic world, in our financial planning world, however you want to frame that? How do we maximize those moments of freedom? And it actually began when I was a boy, and I realized at 3 years old that I was experiencing these rushes of freedom and how incredible it was. And I remember even long after I'd graduated from college, I still look back at my experience as a three-year-old. I look back on that year as being the best year of my life.
Wow.
So it's harder for me to remember it now at age 71, but it was just this powerful awareness that we are here, we're living creatures, we're meant to live our life to the fullest. Mm-hmm. So when I left college and university, I went to graduate school briefly in accounting, and I started off doing tax returns for a living. But I knew very quickly, as I was meeting with people, that what I really wanted to do was to find a way to give them more freedom. Mm-hmm. And also, for me, the passion at that time was that I discovered in college that I loved literature. I loved the arts. I thought of myself much more as a poet and as an artist and as a spiritual figure. I studied world religions and philosophies, mm-hmm. and I wanted to live that rich a life. But, you know, just as for, I'm sure for yourself and for everybody else, that stuff doesn't always pay the bills.
Sure. Got it. Yep.
And so I was faced with that, and it was a really hard experience, as I think it is for many people, and on through our lives, it can be a hard experience because we want so much to be with our kids, mm-hmm. or to be out sailing, or to be giving back into the community, or be doing something creative. We want so much to do these other things, and yet we're constrained to make that living, to pay the bills, to go back to work. So it was that recognition that I wasn't alone in this. I might have a very different vision of freedom inside myself from other people, but I wasn't that different in terms of longing to live a life of freedom, mm-hmm. and still having some of the constraints of working for a living that didn't echo that or didn't support that fully. So it was that passion that I learned for myself that I wanted to figure out and then deliver the most efficient way for clients to actually live with much more freedom in their lives.
Got it. So a lot of self-application, a lot of self-experience led you to somehow bottle that up and show others how to go on the same journey that you were on, or were you just figuring this out along the way? Tell me a little bit more.
Yeah, I think it was really both. And so I, because I was, you know, a passionate about the arts and more spiritual realms, I was focused on freedom inside myself, on mm-hmm. living a life that was creative and unusual and outside the box. So I was really focused on that. And I kept, and as part of that as well, Matt, I mean, one of the things when we talk about the first meeting, one of the things that's extremely important is our relationship. It's all about relationships. Mm-hmm. And so how do we make that relationship so trustworthy, so kind, so gracious, so connected and interested that the client is eager to trust us, which doesn't happen often in financial services, mm-hmm. so that they're willing to trust us and so that then we can, that they are willing to open to those three questions. So one of the things also that I began to look at, I had in my tax business, many of my clients were ended up being therapists. I was in Cambridge, and so I had many professors and young entrepreneurs, but there was a huge number of psychologists, counselors, social workers, and I became fascinated in how could I deliver them more freedom by delivering them a richer menu of deductions mm-hmm. on their tax returns. So I went and studied what they studied so that I could really think through what would be the best tax deductible deductions mm-hmm. for them. So I learned a lot from them. I learned about empathy and I learned about listening. I learned about really real presence, really being present with people. And that's really, you know, you talk about life planning, and the basis of it is great listening. And the basis of great listening is, I think it's mindfulness and this kind of emotional connection.
Got it. So, you know, in your time, as you were out, you know, working as a financial planner, as a tax advisor, were you always taking this approach to your work? Like, for example, like using the three questions, is that something that you developed over, you know, years of working more closely? How did that come to be? Like, tell me about the journey to discover, you know, really honing in on those three questions, if that's a good, you know, launch point into that part of the conversation.
Yeah, great. It is a great launch point. And I think that in the early days, I was just focused on my clients as tax clients, mm-hmm. and I knew that I had to know them really well in order to be able to know what kinds of exotic, different, unusual deductions they could be taking mm-hmm. and paying attention to so that they could take home more income ultimately. But as I shifted to financial planning, that was really where the transformation began. So I knew I was interested in delivering more freedom for clients, more moments of freedom. As I shifted to financial planning and looked at the process of financial planning and recognized that first there was this gathering of information, what I realized was that the gathering of information, I realized this right from the get-go, that the gathering of information that we traditionally do with our data gatherers and with kind of random questions was not either an efficient process nor a trustworthy process. Mm-hmm. To actually deliver great financial planning to a client. Mm-hmm. And what I realized was that the best process would focus on, first of all, on a relationship conversation where the client felt not only comfortable, but excited to reveal to the advisor, to myself in this case, who they were, who they are, mm-hmm. and what they really want. Just as with my tax clients, I needed to know even more so with a financial planning client, I needed to know who they were, because how else do I know how long they should keep their investments tied up, mm-hmm. what kind of range of risk they should be tolerating? They couldn't tell me that. This is kind of an artificial, we've got a very artificial approach to risk in the industry, because they can't know if they don't really know who they want to be and have articulated that and see that passion for being that person is intimately tied up with the process of financial planning and portfolio construction, mm-hmm. taxes, retirement planning and estate planning that we do. Mm-hmm. So I went the first conference I went to, I think one of the sessions was on goal setting. And I went, and they had some goal setting about, you know, kind of what do you write on your funeral stone, you know, that kind of thing, legacy questions. And I thought, well, these are good, but they're not great. And so I just started wrestling with and designing the three questions. Mm-hmm. And I realized that in doing the three questions, the first of the three questions had to be not so deep, because clients have to learn to trust you. So
right.
The first two questions just had to be about money. You know, mm-hmm. what if you won the lottery? What would you do? How would you live your life?
Mm-hmm. And it's something too, where you almost have to soften the blow a little bit, because where you're going is going to be, you know, a pretty deep place, right? With, you know, those other questions they really get into the weeds, and they challenge, you know, somebody who's probably never been asked anything like this before to engage in a conversation with, you know, in some cases a stranger. You know, maybe they've known the person for 15, 20 minutes at this point. That's kind of the way that you're easing into it. Is that right?
Well, actually we recommend having a first meeting that does not have the three questions in it.
Okay.
We recommend having them in a second meeting, and having the first meeting really clearly dedicated to the client. So that means you don't get out your PowerPoints mm-hmm. and show them your 25 slides and why you're best and all this kind of stuff. That your first question really is, why are you here? And then if they say, well, it's for my 401k and my mm-hmm. you know, portfolio, you go, no. I mean, if you and I were to work together for a long time, what would you want to come out of this work together? And then if they go still back to the finances, no. For your life, in your life, what would mm-hmm. you want to have happen? Who would you want to be? And so you start off with getting them to talk about, you know, they're wanting to educate their kids, or they're wanting to just whatever their passions are and their concerns are. Mm-hmm. And that's the emotional part, is that if you want to have enough empathy, know enough how to deliver empathy, that if a client comes in really stressed, that you have empathy for it. If they're really worried about something, you can pause and listen. And there's a wonderful formula for trustworthiness that my friend Charlie Green devised for his consulting group called the Trusted Advisor Network. Mm-hmm. And that formula, he does it mathematically, which I love. So trustworthiness, or T, equals credibility, mm-hmm. right? That makes sense. Plus reliability. So you're there on time and you get the work done and all that. So credibility, that's your designations and your degrees and all of that. And then plus reliability, plus intimacy. Mm-hmm. And that intimacy is about this ability to really be connected to the client, not about your work, not about finance, but about who they are. Mm-hmm. And then you divide those three things by something he calls self-orientation, S for self-orientation. So self-orientation is your marquee. It's your website. It's your, I do this. It's your, this is how we do it different from everybody else. It's the marketing and the advertisement and your puff pieces about yourself.
Mm, yeah.
And the higher that, as if you know you're just simple, you know, division, the higher that self-orientation is, the lower your trustworthiness for a client. So that first meeting is proving that trustworthiness by completely giving it over to the client and who they want to be. Mm-hmm. And then it's in the second meeting that they trust you so much that they're eager to go forward. In fact, I landed practically every client I got in the first meeting. And the way that landing would happen at the end of the meeting, I would say, well, we don't have to do, you know, I had an investment policy statement and a client agreement letter. Sure. And I said, we don't have to do this now. And they would typically go, no, I want to.
My goodness. Were you ever setting the stage in that first meeting for what was to come in the second? Like, did you ever tell them about the exercise that they were going to do when they came back in with those three questions? Or was your job really just to instill, you know, those three things, the C, the R, and the I, credibility, reliability, and intimacy? Were you just trying to make sure that you showed all of those qualities in your work in meeting one, knowing that if you did that, they're going to trust you enough that you can just launch into those questions in the second meeting?
My style, and I was admittedly rather chaotic compared to many of the extremely highly organized office operations we see out there now. But my style was to send everything out to the client before the first meeting.
Okay.
And so they would have the three questions. But often, I mean, how many clients come in and they've done the whole data gatherer?
Right.
I mean, my experience was that, you know, maybe 30%.
And they're all engineers.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So you have a huge number that don't. And the ones that didn't, it was kind of interesting. Would they do just the facts and figures? Or would they do the three questions? Hmm. And it kind of depended on, were they more personally oriented? Or were they really kind of retentive toward and analytical toward the numbers. So, but the first meeting was such that I won their hearts and won the relationship, connection, their trust, so that they were eager to bring in in the second meeting. So I was able to, I just gave them a kind of a marketing pitch at the end of that meeting for how important the questions were and the rest of the information.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Well, let's talk, if you don't mind, about those three questions, and let's just talk about each of them individually. So,
sure.
You know, someone comes back in, they're sitting back down. You've greased the skids for this exercise. There's that trustworthiness there. You know, how do you really go about asking them these? Can you walk us through that?
Yeah. What I do now, I send them out. So I used to ask them in person.
Okay.
But I decided to send them out. I ask them in person when someone comes back for a review meeting a year or two after the initial life plan has been devised.
Okay.
And so you would typically do a pretty much full life planning process every couple of years with a client. Mm-hmm. And then also periodically at times of great change or great transition in their lives, you would also reintroduce the three questions. And there you would do it in person because the intimacy is so strong. The connection is so strong between you and your client. One of the things that life planning does is it delivers a client for life. I mean, you don't have clients leaving after the next market downturn. Why would they do that? If you have a good investment and financial program, plus you're really clearly on their side, like no advisor ever has been before. Why would they leave you?
Right.
So I typically would send the clients out as part of the data gathering process. And then when the clients came in, I would address either first the husband or first the wife. And I would go through all three of the questions with one of them. And then I would go through all three of the questions with the other one.
Okay.
And at the end of those three questions, I would do something that I call lighting the torch. And that's in one of my books as you how you do that. But it's really trained primarily in the 5-day training we do. And what we do in that torch is we take the final question primarily, which I'll come back and remind you of, but that final question, which is really a death question, it's really life or death. It's what's most urgent for a client to accomplish in their life. I take that, and then I take some things from, we've got something called a heart's core grid, and I take some things from that and some things from their ideal day or week or year, and I'd speckle them into an offer. So the only sale I ever do in life planning, I never sell them on my process. I never sell them on the money management. I never sell them on a product. The only sale I ever do is if, as a consequence of our work together, I or we were to deliver to you a moment in time, a couple of years from now, where you had fulfilled all these things, where you'd become the doctor that you want to be, or you were playing jazz in clubs on Wednesday evenings every day, and you had this great relationship with your kids where you were taking these vacations with them and all that. So you just put into that whatever it is that the client most longs for, and you deliver it within a maximum of 3 years. Often you start them on it within a month or so. And you go, how would that be? And the client is so thrilled. They're so moved that anybody would think to put together an image of the life they really want and they've been holding themselves back from. And I think that's the thing most of us advisors forget. We think we're delivering them. When we deliver our portfolio, when we deliver the retirement plan, we think we're giving this great thing to the clients. What they really want is they want their life.
And
that's what we do in life planning, is we actually create the offer so it's about their life. And they feel that they're going to be starting to live it immediately when they leave your office.
Wow.
And that's so powerful. They just simply can't say no to it. And then you do deliver it. You deliver it. So that's the process. That third question, let me just mention that. So the first one has to do with money. If you had all the money you needed, what would you do?
Yep.
But it's the third question, and you work progressively to it. The second question is about you have 5 to 10 years left to live. How would that change things? What would your objectives be in life? What would you do? But it's the third question that's the powerful, most powerful one. And it's also life or death. And it's not about what you would do. It's you go to the doctor and the doctor says, you only have 24 hours left to live. Sorry. You know, I mean, I've been running tests and you've had an ailment, an illness, and it's come to term. So the question is reflecting on what you anticipated doing with the rest of your life. The question is, what did you miss? Who did you not get to be? What did you not get to do? And that's a punch. That really lands for most people. And it lands either with the almost devastating recognition that you've missed delivering to yourself the life that you really, really want. And well, it always gives that. But the question is, does it give you a lot of energy to go, well, I'm going home and I'm going to start doing this? Because that's what happens for probably most of the clients. And then there are some clients who get depressed from it, realizing that they haven't. And there, the life planner is trained in an empathy process to bring them through that and to lead them into the excitement that they can, in fact, begin to deliver on this right away.
Wow. So, yeah. Wow. You know, what really jumps out at me as I've been taking notes and listening, the first word that I wrote down here was the word relationship.
Yeah.
It just seems like the deep-seated relationship that's going to be formed if you go through this process and you at least know the answers to those questions.
Yeah.
No other professional they work with knows the answers to those questions. Arguably, a lot of the people in their social life probably don't even know the answers to those questions. So you're
that's right.
You've got a pretty big responsibility as a professional now to do something with that information. You know what is at the core of what drives this individual and what is most important to their inner being, and now you got to do something with that. You can't just ask the questions and not do anything about it. You have to be able to like supporting them in that journey.
And you know, Matt, if I were recommending how do you get there so you can do that, the first thing I'd suggest is go get life planned yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Search out a registered life planner somewhere and actually have the experience so that you have challenged yourself to live the life you're meant to live. Because if you're sitting there in that office and you haven't done that for yourself, and then you try to challenge the client to live the life they're meant to live, you're going to come across, the client's going to see right through you. They're going to feel your inauthenticity and you're not going to deliver. So you have to be doing it for yourself. So that would be my first recommendation. And the second one, of course, is to get trained to be a life planner.
Yes.
So that you really know the listening skills and how to deliver the three questions.
Yes. It makes a ton of sense. So I'll ask you this, George, you know, when professionals are trying this, so, you know, obviously going through the training, you're going to have an entire another level of being a practitioner of life planning. But, you know, for someone that's just like me that stumbled across these questions as I was being a student of the industry, where do you see folks trip up? Where do you see mistakes that they're able to make when they're trying these questions out, when they haven't really taken the time to go and learn about all of it?
Well, I think that I honestly think the main thing is to just as I did as a rookie myself, it is to have tested inside yourself for your dream of freedom. And getting a life plan is a great way to do it, because you're also going to be seeing someone who's pretty experienced at having the relationship skills to deliver it. But I think the most important thing is that if you have tested for yourself and tested yourself on what is your dream of freedom, and you've really made sure that you're delivering on it, there is a layer of authenticity and of, you see, I mean, if we haven't done that, there's a part of us that's fighting with who we are in our work, fighting with who, you know, what we're required to do, fighting with our job, fighting all over the place because we feel that we're not able to really live up to who we're meant to be. So if you've tested that and you're really working on all cylinders to deliver that into the world, then when you deliver the three questions, you can't help but do it with authenticity, because you're there, you've tested yourself, you know what this is.
Got it. Makes a ton of sense. You know, one thing I wanted to circle back around to also is, you know, you gave some examples of when this might be revisited, you know, down the road when there's significant life events. How much of your time when you were, you know, practicing this with your clients, how much of your time was spent talking about like what you learned in subsequent planning meetings? You know, was it always kind of brought back into the forefront? Like if you're focusing on a financial plan or a tax plan, were there elements of the life plan too that you're reminding them of throughout the process, or was it just specific events where it would come back into play? How was it always interweaved?
It's always there. Good question. It is always there, because if it's not there, then the client is not going to buy the insurance that they might need. Mm-hmm. They're not going to do the estate plan. They're going to be resistant around actually gathering the facts and details that would provide the best tax plan for you. They're going to be resistant around all of the process, because the process, it ain't fun, really. I mean, mm-hmm. it really isn't. And it's not how we're meant to live. We don't want to be doing our tax returns and collecting all that information. We want to be out in the springtime. You know,
yeah.
we want to be out in the weather. We want to be doing something fun, or we want to be going to some event. So, but you make it fun when you connect it to what's really important to the client, when you're able to say, you know, this is really going to enable you to spend significantly more time with your 6-year-old son. And I know you've been longing to do that. We're going to make that happen because of what we're doing with this tax work or this estate planning work, whatever. And you link it. And you sprinkle it in throughout the work. It's not that you go back and you revisit the third question necessarily. I do that every couple of years or in a major transition. But you definitely, I mean, when a client comes in for a review meeting, some clients, some advisors work with annual reviews, some advisors work with quarterly reviews. Mm-hmm. So whenever the client comes in for a review meeting, the first thing you do is connect with the client. And it's not just, hey, you know, how was your drive, or, you know, isn't the weather nice, or whatever. It's really back around who they're passionate about being. Mm-hmm. And if anything's changed in their life that, you know, but you're viewing the qualitative aspect of their life. How's the graduate school coming? How's the new office? How's your relationship going along? Because that's often one of the themes. Are you taking those dates on Friday nights? You know, whatever, mm-hmm. you know, whatever the
right.
the stuff is. You know, how's playing the trombone? You know, have you been in any concerts lately? You haven't been sending me the literature. You know, let me know. So you connect around what they care about, and then you pause. A lot of the secret, a lot of what we train in our 5-day training, which is our best training by far,
okay.
a lot of what we do in that 5-day training is we train an advisor how to pause. And it's in the pause that the client finds who they are, that they feel at first, sometimes it feels a little bit awkward. But soon the client realizes that it's a huge gift to them,
mm-hmm.
because the advisor isn't filling the airwaves with their portfolio and their tax work and their
finally.
Estate law.
Finally,
right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So the pause is a tremendous gift to them. And mm-hmm. we teach the pause. And the pause is also really extraordinary around the three questions and around every emotional nuance in a meeting. That a pause adds an ability for those emotions to be processed in a way that is healthy and easy.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
That's very good. That's very good. You know, another thing I wrote down as we were chatting, it's, you know, you almost have to ask the question, if you know about, like, this life planning, I mean, how can you deliver and do the right work for these people and deliver the right financial plan if you haven't gone down the life planning route? I mean, you look at in this industry today and you've got all these advisors that
right.
call themselves fiduciaries, right? Because they have a license. But in order to
right.
in order to do that, you kind of actually have to do this stuff.
Yep, absolutely. Matt, you nailed it in terms of the current kind of hot issue in the industry right now. You simply can't be a fiduciary. People call themselves one, but mm-hmm. you aren't, if you don't do a life planning approach.
Right.
Because if fiduciary is all about putting the client's interests first.
Right.
But if you don't know who the client is and who they really want to be, if it's just been a data gatherer questionnaire, you don't have a clue who the client is and who they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know, you haven't felt them, you know, emotionally, you haven't connected in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, so what your plan is, it's the old thing about putting your ladder on the wrong wall. You know, you're, you know, and you've got this structure, this ladder, of finance, and it's on the wrong wall. It's aiming for the wrong thing.
Wow.
So it's not fiduciary at all.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
It's something, you know, for advisors that are out there that the light bulb is going off at this moment, George, and they're like, wow, I get it. I need to figure this stuff out. I need to, you know, be able to deliver this service to my clients.
Yeah.
How can they get started? I know that you have a number of books that are that you've authored. You know, 7 stages of money maturity, lighting a torch. You've got the coursework. How can somebody? What's the best way for someone to get started and learn life planning through your method and your teachings?
Yeah. Well, the books are a real simple introduction, obviously, if you read, and reading is falling further and further from our eyes and civilization right now. But if you don't read that much and don't want to read, then there's a do-it-yourself website called Life Planning for You,
okay,
which is a pretty quick introduction. But the truth is, Matt, once you've kind of dipped in and just seen, oh yeah, this looks right, we've got a series of programs, and by far the best program, because it addresses each meeting that you have with a client, each engagement that you have, is the 5-day training that we have. And that would be my big recommendation. And if you have to beg, borrow, or steal to take it, do it.
Got it.
It'll change. What it does, what's amazing about it, because you get life planned on it. And you also practice life planning your partner throughout 5 days. So you have one person you're working with, and they actually life plan you on what your real issues are, on your 3 questions. And so you experience, plus you have at least, typically there are at least 3 trainers to a maximum of 12 to 14 advisors. So the teacher-student ratio is fantastic. And the trainers are encouraging you to live your life plan as well. So you get the benefit of discovering and delivering yourself into your life plan, while at the same time practicing and learning every single meeting. So that you not only practicing it inside yourself, but watching 10 other people deliver it as well. So it's just phenomenal.
Wow. And where could an advisor go? Is that the Life Planning for You website where they would go to get information on the 5-day course, or is there a different spot where we can send them?
A different website for that. That's our kinderinstitute.com website.
All right.
And, yeah.
Awesome. And for all the listeners, especially those that are behind the wheel, don't try and write it down now. I will hang all these up. These will be up at advisorelevation.com in the speaker's notes for this episode. So, George, I'd like to shift gears, and I'm really curious. I want to learn about what you've been doing lately. I want to hear about the Golden Civilization. I know you dropped a new book. Was it just back in March?
Yes.
I want to hear about that. I want to hear what is the new, what's on the forefront of what you're working on now?
Yeah, thanks, Matt. There's lots of ways that, first of all, this is going to sound like it has nothing to do with life planning at all or financial planning. But in fact, there are lots of ways that advisors are working with my new book in a way that enhances their clients' lives. Mm-hmm. So I may not have a chance to touch on all of those, because the first thing is just to explain what it is that I'm doing. But I just want to say that we've found many ways to integrate it with life planning practices, which has been very exciting. But as I started off saying, I'm passionate about freedom. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's a mistake when we take our eyes off the maximization of freedom, mm-hmm, across the board in civilization, that's really what we're about, what the Homo sapiens are about, what wise humans are meant to do. And so when the banking crisis occurred in 2008, I felt I was devastated, because I thought I'd worked for 30 years to increase integrity in the financial services industry and increase listening skills and relationship skills. And it felt to me as if all my work had gone for naught, basically, because how could this happen in the industry that I'd worked in for all these years, mm-hmm. And worked to improve standards. So I took it personally, and I began to write a book on, you know, kind of my final book on money, basically. And as I was writing it, I was realizing, well, this really branches off into economics and how we think about economics. This isn't just about life planning, and it's about our whole economic structure. And then I realized, well, if it's about our economic structure, it's about how do we decide that economic structure, which means it's about our democracy as well. So it's been also very interesting, and as troublesome as it is to our culture, to be polarized and divided, and not just our culture, but many cultures all over the world. I live a lot of each year in England, and of course that culture is deeply divided right now as well. Mm-hmm. But I realized that that you could address that it was time to address a different issue, that we're not really focusing on the right issue in civilization, that really that it's time to life plan civilization. Mm. I mean, doesn't that make sense? I mean, to build a structure of trust and then build such a powerful vision amongst us all that we can't help but say, yes, I want that. Let's make it happen. Mm. And it made me think that just as in life planning, we have a maximum of 3 years for the offer, that we ought to transform civilization in this way, life planning it, to the vision that we really want, mm-hmm. within a generation.
Wow.
You know, let's do it. Let's just make it happen. And my intuition was, having worked with people, you know, I mean, I'm in finance. I work with people, and I've had clients from all over the world and all over America, from many different political orientations, religious orientations, ages, gender, you know, everything. And I thought, there's something about each of us that calls for the same vision. Mm-hmm. And so I've devised in the book, I talk about how would we do this, but I've also devised conversations now that many registered life planners, among many others, are teaching all over the world. And it's just a simple conversation, life planning, civilization, and then it's meant to be kind of a participative democracy, ongoing conversation that might occur once a quarter, mm-hmm. or if you're really eager for it, it might be once a week. But it's joyous, it's inspiring, it's hopeful. It's not ranting and complaining and, you know, about this or that. It's creating a community that's positive, because it's positive around a vision that you share. And Matt, what's really interesting when you do the, you know, kind of the exploration meeting and the vision meeting in the Golden Civilization conversations, mm-hmm. the vision that people have, the word that comes up, I think, more than any is kindness, mm. and collaboration, vitality, communication, energy, inclusion, all the democratic virtues that we think of, freedoms of speech and of press and assembly and all of that. Democracy comes up, but hugely virtues: kindness, patience, equanimity, equality. And by that, I think they mean democratic equality. So there's, anyway, it's a vision that we all hold. Mm-hmm. And so then we work to go, well, how can we make this happen? And rather than having one point of view, because again, you can have people on one side, as we know, of politics, or the other side. My view is to support what individual actions people want to take. So what's come out of these meetings is sometimes there'll be subgroups, sometimes the whole group will want to do something, sometimes there'll be individual actions. And the classic actions are acts of kindness. Second, maybe most common action is, I want to listen better. I want to hear my neighbor who I haven't been able to have a conversation with, mm-hmm. in the last few years. A common one is I want to do something for the homeless. I work in the city, and I'd like to, when I see someone, I'd like to be able to do something for them. A fourth one that's a really large venture that's happening now in London. We've had these conversations in multiple countries on five continents now, and there's an organization. It's just a group. It's just a community gathering in London on Primrose Hill in the outskirts of London. And one of the things they're now doing is they're devising a manual for bringing wisdom into society at all ages, from age 6 to 96 is how they're framing it.
Wow.
And they're thinking about, and the main one of the frames that I sometimes use is, if we're such a great entrepreneurial society, and entrepreneurial is one of the words that comes out in the visioning, how come we don't have wisdom? And wisdom is another term that comes out in the visioning. How come we don't have wisdom, real wisdom, figures of wisdom that we respect at the top of every single hierarchy of power in the world? How come? And moreover, why wouldn't that wisdom then permeate the whole organization? So these are things that I think it's time that we actually did it. You know, it's not fooled around anymore. And my hunch is that there's something a little bit off that needs tweaked, mm-hmm. right at the basis of the structures that we've had. So, for instance, I emphasize self-knowledge over self-interest, and I emphasize freedom over transactions, moments of freedom. So how can we increase those so that society actually delivers a golden civilization within a generation?
Wow, that's a pretty big movement that is sparking. I mean, that's really deep stuff that you're talking about here. And what it comes down to is, at the core of human beings, just doing the right thing to each other. Am I right? I mean, you're talking about things like kindness and like the way that it should be. How much of this work are you finding crosses over into the religious beliefs of the people that are involved? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. I mean, you've got this huge divide there, of course, as well. And so what's interesting is the frame that we have is we listen, and then we have a vision, and then we look at obstacles. And then we look at what are the action steps? What are the main obstacles in society to the vision? And then what are the action steps we need to take? And then personal commitments. And it's inspiring. And what happens, one of the interesting things around religion and spiritual beliefs or religious beliefs is that some people put religion at the center of the vision. And some people put religion as an obstacle. Mm. And then some people, others, will take action steps and go, well, within my religious community, this is what I want to do. This is how I want to address it. So there's a variety. And my approach to this is a kind of an egalitarian democracy. I want everybody to be cooking on all cylinders, and I don't want to squelch anybody. So if one person feels they're an obstacle, and if they want to do something about it, more power to them. If one person feels that they're the real essence of transformation, then I want to support them, and more power to it. And I don't see them as being in opposition the way we do in our polarization. I see different people working in different ways to support the ultimate vision, which is of kindness, collaboration, wisdom, equanimity, communication, all of those things. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It does. So these conversations going on around the world, you say, there's groups of people now that are meeting quarterly, just having conversations about how to make the golden civilization, how to make this world a better place.
That's right. Wow. That's right. And it's just, we're just around 100 conversations right now, and it will probably take 1,000 or more before this really is something that you could say, well, it's a movement, because at that point, you're going to have lots of communication between those organizations.
Right.
So you're going to have people who are really focused on corruption, let's say, and they're going to want to join with other groups, or groups that are focused on kindness, and they're going to want to join with other groups who are focused on that, or groups that are focused on the homeless. And so that interweaving within civilization is going to be quite extraordinary.
Wow. What would be the best way for somebody to get involved with this? Do you recommend the book first? Should they go and try and get involved in a conversation first? What's your advice?
Yeah, I would reach out to us for conversations, and we're open. I'm traveling all around. I'm delivering these conversations, Matt, myself. I'm trying to do three a week.
Wow.
And I'm doing them wherever I go. So if I get a gig, like a financial speaking gig, and they're paying me, which I have one, a big one in St. Louis in September, mm-hmm. I'm now reaching out to churches, synagogues, community centers, universities in that area to try and spreckle and spend another 3, 4, 5 days there mm-hmm. making this happen in that way. So I'm doing that, but yes, they should go to the website, www.agoldencivilization.com, agoldencivilization.com. And I think that has that highlights the book, so you can find a way to the book. Mm-hmm. The book is inspiring and challenging. It's meant to be challenging because it's important to think outside the box. If we're going to do something and really land a golden civilization, we need to think outside the box and not just get locked into the political, you know, polarization that's there. We need to think what the vision is, mm-hmm. And then gather the movement to make it happen.
Wow. Wow, this has been very, very intriguing, George. I want to thank you. I want to thank you for your time. And I want to also be respectful of your time as we're coming up here on an hour. And you're a busy man out there trying to change the world right now, having all these conversations throughout the course of the week and traveling all over the globe. Honestly, it's kind of a you know, I don't really have many words for it. It's just it's a big deal, and it's very intriguing. I was when I first had read the summary of the Golden Civilization, I was just kind of like, whoa, you know, like this is it's if you think about it, why can't this work? Why can't people come together and work towards what they all want anyways? It's really, really cool stuff. So I applaud you for what you're doing, and I thank you so much for sharing it with me and with the folks that tune into this show. But it's really remarkable, and I can't wait to get into the book myself and learn even more about it.
Well, let me know what you think, Matt, and keep in touch. I'm excited that it means a lot to me that you've been moved by the conversation. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. And George, again, thank you for your time. I speak on behalf of the listeners of the show as well. Just wanted to thank you and wish you the best. And I will, as soon as I finish that book, I'll shoot you a note.
That'd be great. Thanks so much.
All right, George. Okay. Thanks so much.
This information is for licensed financial professionals only and is not intended for use in soliciting sales from the public. The views expressed represent the opinions of the presenter or their featured guest, not necessarily those of USA Financial or its affiliated subsidiaries. Industry references are generic and not intended to represent actions or beliefs of any individual or entity. Content is only presented to illustrate general principles, beliefs, or ideas and should not be construed as legal or regulatory advice. Trademark and copyright protected. USA Financial and affiliates.